could say it's someone shoots in ladders. It's bad.
I'm done.
Mine was just that maybe Mr. Body's plan backfired.
I don't have witty anything for you guys.
Mine wasn't witty.
Or does anybody remember Crossfire? That was a board game too. It was a real gnip-gnob.
Is that a board game?
It was, yeah. I'm just trying to connect four on this.
I married this woman.
So Wadsworth takes them all into the study, and everybody sits down in different places, and he's just like, oh, I'm here to tell you why you're here. And then...
Do you like how Mr. Body is, like, cocky and silent most of the time? Like, he gets into a captain's chair, if you don't know. A dining chair has no arms, mm-hmm. but at the head of the table, you have what is called a captain's chair, and it's got two arms. So he sits in a captain's chair on the side of the room, and he just places his arms like some sort of godfather figure. Like, he should be important, but like in the scheme of things, is he? I mean, you don't feel a particular way about Mr. Body, do you?
He's a very good distraction.
He is like a maroon herring. Like, not quite red.
Mr. Body is played by a man named Lee Ving. Lee Ving, and that was why he was cast in this role.
Shut your face.
It is a Sean fact.
Tell me.
They cast Lee Ving because Mr. Body was leaving. He was a front man for the rock band Fear.
I don't know Fear. Feel free to edit in a Fear song right now. Wonderful. Thank you so much. A garbage character. Garbage. Nobody needs him. But he's essential to the plot, so I get why they have him.
Right.
But like, if he wasn't, he could be played by a sexy lamp. Hey, what if we took garbage men characters and made them into sexy lamps?
I mean, it probably happens a lot. We just don't necessarily reference it.
Tell me that the evil ball from Fifth Element couldn't be played by a sexy lamp.
I don't think
so. He's basically a lamp.
He's like a ticking time bomb.
Oh, that's probably
so true. He would be a lamp with a timer attached.
I like that he would be a sexy lamp named Mr. Shadow.
And there were like literal sexy lamps in the Brave Little Toast.
What?
Would it be an actual phallus if it's a sexy lamp? Or
Lampy was like, ah!
So back to the movie, we have my next note at this point is blackmail equals motive, because that's what Wadsworth is exposing. He's like, the common denominator between all of you is that you are all being blackmailed.
Okay, so shall we do, because we're going to rush through this pretty quick. Do we know what they're all being blackmailed for?
Colonel Mustard. Mm-hmm. Are we going to be talking about these right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so
they're all getting listed right now.
Okay, so Colonel Mustard is getting blackmailed by somebody. And the reason why he's getting blackmailed is because of the fact that he sold radio parts to different during the war.
Okay, you were mostly right. Mostly. You're 100% right, except that doesn't get exposed until the third act.
Right.
In this scene, he is accused of using a brothel.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
We don't find out that he's a war profiteer until later on.
Okay.
Moving on.
All right.
I actually asterisked this business in my notes.
Okay.
My poor, like, applauders, my notes are so bad this episode. Okay, go on. Next one.
Mrs. White. Mm-hmm. And she is accused of killing her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which at dinner she was like, he lies on his back all day. And then they talk about, then someone brings up the fact that she, is that why your husband was lying on his back all day?
Because he was stabbed in the back, but he was in fact beheaded.
Yes.
Twice.
Thank you.
He was beheaded and be-penised. If you didn't catch if you didn't catch that.
Men in Room cross their legs on hearing that.
Yeah. I thought it was hilarious. That was a pretty good sight gag. There are so many sight gags we cannot cite in this podcast that were amazing. Okay, next up.
Mrs. Peacock. Mm-hmm. She was accused of funneling secrets in the bathroom. Like her husband was a senator.
She was taking bribes.
Bribes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Her husband's a politician. We find out over dinner accidentally before we find out so much more about everyone else. She was taking bribes passed to her under the bathroom door. Just chef's kiss. Beautiful. Yeah. Okay, then.
I don't know if we're doing these in order. Is that okay?
And we've only got three left.
Okay. Mr. Green is a homosexual.
A governmental employee.
Who is also a homosexual.
Homosexual.
Which I will talk about this. There was a thing during the second Red Scare in McCarthyism called the Lavender Scare where it was, I could probably bring up the Wikipedia information.
You know what's really funny is, remember when Friends of Dorothy, did we talk about this during Return to Oz? Friends of Dorothy was, so somebody would refer to themselves as a friend of Dorothy, right? Uh-huh. Which was a reference to Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which was an LGBTQ plus AI ... scenario. But the government was like, Dorothy? Dorothy who? And spent literal millions of dollars trying to find out who this Dorothy was so they could find all of her gay friends and with them. I love that. It's so dumb.
Yeah. But according to the Wikipedia article about the Lavender Scare, they pretty much summarize it as gay men and lesbians were said to be a national security risk and communist sympathizers, which led the call to remove them from state employment. It was thought that gay people were more susceptible to being manipulated, which could pose a threat to the country.
Man, the gay / whatever persons I've known in service have been so dedicated to the cause that it is literally stupid. They've been like, you know what? I want to serve my country and I want to live my truth, but living my truth and serving my country are diametrically opposed right now. So I'm going to go ahead and do that at risk to my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that, and they do it with such heart that it is irritating that someone would have to pass a don't ask, don't tell, that someone would have to pass whatever legislature that was just like, hey. The amount of money it would take to support trans members of, oh my God, we're not getting political, but let me just tell you, the cost of like one of the jets that they build, like one of those $1 billion jets that they build every year, trillions of dollars spent on the military. Super love my military bros, right? Not even mad about them. But if you didn't make one plane and it would support every trans member's complete transition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one less plane, and we've got, again, trillions of dollars on our military. He didn't make one of them. All of them would be supported.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's dumb. It's dumb. It's bad math. It's stupid, and fuck you.
Right.
Okay, sorry. I'm still mad about it.
I would like to point out that Mr. Green does say that he holds no personal shame in this, like, or personal. I'm not sure if he says shame or guilt or responsibility or...
He's the first to volunteer. He says, you know, he stands up while everyone's being called out by proxy or by
someone else.
By Butler, yeah. Right? By Wadsworth. He's the one who stands up and he's like, I'm a government employee and a homosexual. Because that's the most shameful thing he can think about himself. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking because, right. Like, that's not a shameful thing. I've known many people.
Right. And when this hit in like the 1980s, like you could see a lot more like, you know, gay characters coming out. They're trying to play gay characters as being very sympathetic. I think like the Hays Code like officially stopped in like the 1970s. So you could very easily.
Oh, yeah. The Hays Code.
Yeah.
Guys, if you want to spend a minute Googling something to make you enraged, go ahead.
Right. But like there was a lot of push in Hollywood because theater is something that attracts gay people. Sorry. I say this as a straight woman, so please take what I say with a grain of salt. Not the point. But you can see this huge push towards like creating more sympathetic gay characters, kind of like what we're going through right now with trans characters.
Mm.
When in the 1970s and 80s, it was less so for trans characters. Anyways, so like I appreciate that kind of representation and how he's like the most sympathetic character, like not even taking the endings into account.
It's hilarious and wonderful that the things that are scandalous about these characters that we're looking at, one, aren't the most interesting things about them, but two, in that they are not the most scandalous things about them, get brushed kind of towards the hour betwixt the three of us, I think at least, the modern view of it. You're like, oh, sex worker, oldest position. I love that phrase.
Yeah.
Sorry. But like, you know, accept sex work. Like, you don't have to like it to understand that it needs to be accepted. Mm-hmm. Homosexual people, you don't have to like it. They exist and you need to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Like socialists, you don't have to like it. You're probably profiting from it
in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea of people who I know who are like, I'm a capitalist, hardcore capitalist. Look, I'm a bit of a capitalist too. Not mad about the system. End game capitalism, not so great.
Right, late stage capitalism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as a person who would like to own a business one day, not like mad about that.
Right.
But I do like.
I like
municipal products. I like roads and taxes and socialized healthcare, and
I like capitalism when it's regulated and the people who are, you know, making the money and making the jobs are not like allowed to just make as much and declare how much their employees make. I don't like that. I think that needs to be regulated. So, but is kind of getting us off topic.
I'm so sorry. But that's the podcast. So.
Right.
So, okay. So we're still at where, okay. Everyone has been.
I think we have two people left.
Yeah. Okay. We're at Professor Plum.
Right. He was a psychologist who had an illicit affair with one of his patients.
My note says diddled, which is probably not right, because if you're taking advantage of a mentally compromised person, maybe diddled isn't the right word, because that implies when I hear the word diddled, I think two people wanted to do that. But
it's a power structure thing and definitely doesn't make me feel good.
Yep. OK, so then Miss Scarlet.
She works in the oldest profession. She's
a sex worker.
She runs.
Hell yeah.
She runs. How does she say it?
She says, I work a bit. Okay. Approximately. She says, I work a business that associates persons with young women for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, she's a madam at a brothel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That she owns. I like sex worker.
Yeah.
As a term overall, I was talking to mom today, and if I've never said this into your ear before, hey, normalize sex. I know I said it 5 minutes ago, but like normalize sex work. And even if you don't give a like, the problem is that sex workers end up dead, and they are dismissed as being less dead than some cute middle class white chick with blonde hair.
Right.
And guess what? A sex worker doesn't deserve to be any less dead than anyone else who's been murdered.
Right.
And oftentimes in sex work, and this is just another caveat, God bless your editing, Jen, but like sex workers of color, especially trans sex workers of color, are the most murdered and ignored people in the United States, probably short of indigenous women.
Correct.
It's f***ed, and we should be paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not part of this movie. But hey, she's outed as a sex worker, and then they just are like, okay. They're like... Okay.
She admits, though, that isn't really the reason, because what was her reasoning? It was like,
she deals in secrets.
Yeah, she deals in secrets. Like she gets information and she gets money from sharing that information.
Yeah, but that's why they want to initially dismiss her. I mean, that's why as we an audience member are supposed to initially dismiss her. She's everyone in this is more powerful than
they appear.
Everyone in this is more powerful than they appear, except for the powerful people who are obviously less powerful than they appear.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that funny?
Like Mr. Body?
Mr. Body looks super, super powerful, but he's nobody.
Mm-hmm.
He's Mr. Nobody. He's Mr. Leaving. Yeah, that. I hate that. I hate that a lot. But like, also, I respect that and thank you.
Right. So, but it does come up as to what Wadsworth is getting blackmailed. And, like, this is right. Like there are moments.
Wait, what was Wadsworth blackmailed about? I didn't actually write that down.
Well, okay, so I'll lead into it and let you know. Mm-hmm. So there are moments, like you get the poo joke at the beginning. You also get this moment where Professor Plum and Mrs. White are slurping. And I don't know why. It's just so funny. But like there's a lot of tension in
that
first.
I call that the dual slurping scene.
But there's a lot of like there's this huge tension that is built up in this first act. And there are these little like sparks of less tension and of these comedy
That's
beats.
How this movie really does break it. Like you have right. these moments of tension, you have these character building, and there's so much to follow, right. and your brain is like ting 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 ting,
which is the opposite of the third act, which is just nothing but comedy beats and just a little bit of tension.
Yes, that's what happens. Is they give you so much information to take in, and then all of a sudden, like there's this slurping, which is like, here's the thing. As much as I just yelled about how Madeline Kahn is amazing, like her physical comedy is really good. What's the guy's Lloyd, what's his
name? Christopher
face?
Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd drinks his soup, his celery soup, I think it is. And he slurps it and she looks at him with such disdain and everybody is like, ugh.
Right.
The reaction shots in this movie, point. Mm-hmm. On point. Like, might as well be at the precipice of a triangle. On point.
Yeah.
Right. She's like, ew. In her face, and then she like goes to take a slurp and she's like, it's super gross. And like, Miss Scarlet across from her, who should by all accounts be the least refined of us, mm-hmm. is like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes. So yes.
But the moment when Wadsworth pretty much breaks down and tells them that his wife had friends who were socialists, and everybody's reaction is just
that's in the study.
That's in the study.
Yeah, so they've retired to the study now.
Well, I mean, this is during, while they're airing out all of the laundry, right?
Yeah. So we've had, I'm sorry. So slurping was before. Now right. we're in the study. Yes. Yeah, now we have all the blame.
So while they're airing out the blackmail and the dirty laundry and everything, it's really tense. And like people are like, you know, it's very accusatory. It can get a little bit bland in this moment. But then all of that tension and monotony breaks up when Tim Curry, doing his best Tim Curry...
No, I love it. Go.
But he goes ahead and he's like, he just is acting his heart out because he tells the story of his wife who has friends who are socialists. And everybody
Jen, gasp with me. Wait. They all look so shocked.
They literally do. And then he says, like, you know, how they were being blackmailed by Mr. Boddy. And she was so horrified by it that they ended up getting that she ended up taking her own life. Mm-hmm. And that's what broke him, was because his wife committed suicide because she might have friends who, you know, aren't capitalists during the 1950s. But it's the Red Scare was a real thing.
Yeah, like so as the children of boomers, like it's hard for us to understand the kind of pressure that boomers were actually the parents of boomers was actually in. You know, like 1954 was 3 years before my dad was born and a decade before my mother was born. So like these are people who lived through the Second World War who are now like profiting or profiteering or like just reaping the benefits of the aftermath of war, which tends to be a time of great paranoia or like a time of like just like raking it in one way or another, you know?
Right.
So like I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but it's the first moment in the movie where you get this like very obvious like dramatic moment that's over the top. You know that the way that everybody's acting about it is like it's not supposed to be something that's taken seriously.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I love an this is ridiculous moment.
Right.
I think it's important. It's an important beat for the audience, too, because you're kind of coming into this thinking that, like, maybe this is like an Agatha Christie but funny kind of movie based on the actors that are in it. So you're introduced to these first few scenes where they're interacting and you're information gathering at that point. You're hearing everybody else give their details and you are already trying to solve it because you know the premise of Clue already going into the movie.
Because of the board game?
Because of the board game. The premise of the audience is already trying to solve for a murder that hasn't happened yet.
Did we Google when the board game came out yet?
It was in the 50s, I think. We can answer that for sure.
1954.
That would be a good nod, wouldn't you think?
I would love that if that's when it came out.
This is also a Reaganite year, so to not be a capitalist during this time would also be...
85?
Clue or Cluedo came out in 1949 in the U.S. and 1947 in the U.K.
Oh, so still post-war,
mm-hmm.
A few years before this, but for, let's say, a good almost 50 years, no, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
almost a good 40 years, people knew what the premise of it was. And there were also films before this, like Murder on the Orient Express. So people are already trying to kind of solve, like I said, solve for a murder that hasn't quite happened yet by information gathering.
Humans, as a true crime lover, like, I really like a whodunit. Poor Jen has suffered at the hands of this for several decades now, where I'll be like, it was that guy. It was that guy
they introduced in the first act. It's always the guy that they introduce in the first act.
You have to. Otherwise, you feel like you've been duped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't know who done it, if you get to the third act and they were like, and then this other guy showed up, and you're like, also, fuck you. No, thanks. It could not have been Jim Q. Fuck you. Could not have been.
You might say something didn't smell right with the butler.
That's a trope, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think it was referring to the poop at the beginning.
Yeah, no, I get that. But, like, the butler did it is a trope.
Yeah.
So when Jen said something doesn't smell right with a butler, and then, like, four or five of them were like, smell bad.
Yeah.
But I to finish my thought, I think the comment, when Tim Curry makes his comment about his wife knowing socialists and then everybody taking a big gasp, it's sort of like a fuck you to the audience. Like, if you've been information gathering all this to all this point and you've got all these details, just remember this is a comedy and it may not go exactly how you think it's going to go.
Okay, let's draw a parallel. What if, I mean, Lydia, are you vaccinated?
Yes.
Jen and I are also vaccinated. What if we were in this comedy and somebody was like, and my wife was not vaccinated? Like, would that be the same kind of feels? Like, the general public knows this is a truth, right? But there are certain people who are very vocal, who are on the outside, who are like, this is not the truth, right? So in the 80s, when everybody was like, capitalism, woo, and people were like, socialism is, no, fuck it. I don't, I'm not even married to that. Let's do it. Something else.
Okay. I think I messed up my notes because I looked ahead a little bit, and I think that's the Red Scare reveal came later on. At this point, Wadsworth is just saying, you're all being blackmailed, and it's by that guy. And then Mr. Body brings in a box, and he's like, I got these.
Can I say, before the culture that we're in, an unboxing moment?
Yeah, because he hands out these presents to everybody around.
I just wanted you to have all these things because I wanted you to be able to murder whoever the fuck you want.
Right.
He's like, here, have some murder weapons. You don't have to do or think anything about, like, hey, me or the butler. We just kill whoever the fuck. Here's the thing.
It would be at this point that I would pull out my phone and start recording everything, right?
Yeah.
As a person who has several murder items in their room, if I hand you one, you should be concerned.
Right.
And maybe start recording.
But let's see if I have this correct. Miss Scarlet gets the candlestick.
I will tell you.
Okay.
Okay, go down the list.
Miss Scarlet?
Uh-huh.
Candlestick?
Yep.
Mrs. White gets the rope.
A noose. It's tied. It's a noose.
Mr. Green gets the lead pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Mustard gets the wrench.
Correct.
Professor Plum gets the revolver.
Correct.
And Mrs. Peacock gets the knife. Knife.
Knife.
Yeah. And so they pull.
That's how I say it in my head so I can spell it right. The way that I say fry-end and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. But Mr. Body goes around and says, you all are being blackmailed by me. But, you know, Wadsworth is the only one who actually knows about all of these things outside of the rest of us. So if we actually kill Wadsworth, then you can all go home. Also, Wadsworth has the key to the door, and he said that the only way to get the key was off of his dead body. And so Mr. Body goes walking around, talking his little speech, and then when he gets to the door, he shuts the door, and then he's like, and do it now, and then he turns off the light.
He does it to himself.
Yeah. And then like, and then you hear like some sounds, you hear the gun going off, which is shot number one.
Mm-hmm.
You could say it's someone shoots in ladders. That's bad.
I'm done.
Mine was just that maybe Mr. Body's plan backfired.
I don't have witty anything for you guys.
Mine wasn't witty.
Or does anybody remember Crossfire? That was a board game, too. It was a real ganip-ganob.
Is that a board game?
It was, yeah. I'm just trying to connect four on this.
I married this woman. I married this woman. Yeah. Shut in the dark, and you're too late. You gave Mr. Body a bad name.
Right, but there's also, you hear this little like, oh, and a thud, and...
There's a couple screams, and then the light comes on, and then doesn't it shoot to Mrs. Peacock, who's like, she's by the door, and she's like, she's holding her knife, and she's like, ah! And
yeah.
She like, I love this reaction. I don't know how, if this would be how I was, if it ever happened to me, but she sees a body on the ground, and she goes, ah! And then she throws the thing in her hand,
mm-hmm.
which... separates her from a murder weapon that he was obviously not murdered with.
Right.
She has the knife and she's like, and she throws it and she's like,
yeah.
That's my noise if I didn't murder somebody.
Right. And so they're passing blame around and like they think that because they heard the gun go off, they mm-hmm. they accuse Professor Plum about it. He's like, no, someone grabbed it from my hand. And everybody's like, what happened? How did this happen? How did this happen? And they're trying to figure it out because Professor Plum says that he doesn't have a pulse. And then Mrs. Peacock goes for the drink and she drinks it. And then Mr. Green's like,
what if it was poison?
And that's when she's like, ah!
And this is like, ah. So then they direct her.
Mr. Green grabs her,
takes her to the couch, and then she's like, ah.
Yeah.
And then he slaps her in the face, like a very good mute. His name is
Michael McKean.
McKean. He like dramatically slaps her. It is beautifully choreographed, beautifully edited for sound. And then he turns and he's like disheveled and he goes, what? I had to slap her. I had to stop her from screaming.
Right. And then they're like, well, we don't know if he if it was the drink that killed her. So we're just going to have to wait on her to go ahead and die. And that's when everybody just like the camera cuts to Mrs. Peacock. And you see like all of these faces come into frame just staring at her. It's really funny.
Yeah, they all crowd in and are like, we drank it. Are you going to die?
Right. And then they hear a scream coming from the other room.
Oh, I also drank the shot and the cognac.
And this is Yvette. She has a really bad French accent. And they all go into the billiards room where I think the previous scene Wadsworth talks about the fact that they were being recorded. And
she was listening in on them the entire time. And I think they already knew that they were being recorded, but they didn't know that Yvette was listening. And she was like, I was the fairest card. I was also drinking the cognac.
Yeah. And like, let's see what. Okay. So that's when they go back into the study. Wadsworth grabs
Yvette is now in tow.
Right.
She really joins us until she doesn't join us anymore. Hey, applauders. Thanks for listening to part two of
So she goes ahead and she gets shuffled into the study. And that's when Wadsworth grabs the recording and he pretty much confesses to everything, that it was all orchestrated by him. And he was trying to get them, get everybody together, because he wanted, the only way blackmail works is if you don't fess up to what you did. And so that's why he's like, just the police are going to be coming here. All you have to do is fess up to it. And then, you know, he doesn't have anything on you. And that was his original plan. And Mr. Body was like, nope, you can all kill Wadsworth. And then you don't have to fess up to it. And you can still keep paying me. But the basic reason for the blackmail was because of the fact that the people who were doing the blackmail felt everybody who was doing all of these things were fully un-American, but they didn't want to turn them into the police because they wanted to make money off of it.
Okay, so I am with you. Everything that the persons involved were doing was quote-unquote American. And then when it came to why Mr. Body was doing what he was doing was, hey, making money off of information that you happen to have was a bit American. And they all like were like, oh, wait, they cut to Miss Peacock. And she's like, you have a point there. She had that face. She was like,
Reactions are good in this movie.
Oh, my God. I would put them in a bottle.
And this is also when Wadsworth reveals that his wife had socialist friends. So. So and then suddenly blame falls on the cook. And I don't remember why, but they all rush over to the kitchen.
The cook was alone. And so it could have been the cook. They were like, who is alone in the house? They checked Yvette. She's alive. Someone else is dead. And then who is alone but the cook?
Right.
So they rush to find the cook. And then Michael McCain.
Yeah, he opens up.
No, he doesn't open up.
No, it
He's
just.
Like, he goes, whew. There's no one dead in the kitchen. And he like goes to lean back against the meat locker. And then this, what's her name? Hey, wait, no, we should name this lady because she's one of two POC persons.
Her character's name is Mrs. Hahn.
Mrs. Hahn, I just have her listed as the cook. I'm such a jerk.
Kelly Nakahara.
Thank you.
She passed away last year at the age of 72.
Hey, Kelly Nakahara. I fucking love you. You were amazing. You had like one knife pointed at Tim Curry's throat. Life dream.
There, I mean, she didn't have any lines.
I hope she got paid like she had lines.
Right, but
her got grabbed enough that she should have had plenty of lines.
Right, but like you can see a lot of characterization in the small amount of time that she is. She's like the tough cook. You don't want to, like, even Tim Curry is afraid of her.
And you should be. She knows her shit.
And it's also because of her that Miss Peacock ends up getting blackmailed. She turns out to be Mrs. Peacock's cook. And like Mrs. Peacock gave herself away when she was talking about like, oh, this is my favorite dish.
Oh, yes. But it was a weirdly Cantonese dish. Although
it was monkey brains.
Yeah, but like.
Is that actually Cantonese?
You said, wait, hold on a second. Like, look, as a person who obsesses about Asian food, her name was Kim Nakahara?
No.
Kelly.
Kelly. Kelly Nakahara. She was Hawaiian.
Kelly. Okay. So Asian Pacific Islander. Okay. So here's the thing. Pacific Islander, and I speak from a place of ignorance. Let's just be here with that. Nakahara sounds like a Japanese last name.
Right.
And Pacific Islander is, of course, South Pacific. Cantonese, isn't that like
Chinese?
Like solidly Chinese, right? Not even in the same wheelhouse.
Right.
In terms of cuisine.
Right. And it's, I mean, we always talk about how, you know, a lot of the films that we grew up with could have expanded on having people of color in their actors. And like, think about Clue is that gives you a nice, there's so many characters that it, like, as far as like speaking roles go, you could very, very easily expand those and, you know, really pretty much dip into any kind of cultural pool you want to for a character.
It could have been very deep. We only got two POCs deep in this.
Right.
But as much as we have ranted about that in other episodes.
Right.
Let's acknowledge it. We even take a beat. We can go on.
Right. And so they do take the cook's body back to the study because Wadsworth wants to keep things tidy. And I love that.
He always does. That's a consistent thing.
But when they get into the study, they find that Mr. Body's body is gone. So they go ahead and they go ahead and position the cook on the sofa. And that's when Mrs. Peacock picks up and she's like, I need to use the little girl's room, or I need to go and powder my nose. And
oh, is there a restroom in the hall? And Yvette goes, wee wee. No, I just need to powder my nose.
Yeah. And so she goes over to the bathroom, and when she opens up the door, that's when you see dead Mr. Body.
Bleh.
Yeah.
And just like the cook just
falls on her. Yeah. And then when everybody comes out, they're like, Mr. Body's attacking her. And then when they get to him, they realize he's dead. So basically there are two dead bodies in the study. And oh, yeah. So when they go ahead and
position the bodies, right?
Well, they put them both on the couch.
Uh-huh. And they do it so awkwardly. Yeah, Yvette is like, if you throw her on the couch like that, the knife will go deeper into her body. And then Mr. Green is like, oh, well, then put her over the arm of the couch.
Yeah.
and then the women lift the cook, and then the men lift Mr. Body. And then at the end of it, the Professor Plum is like smashed between the two. He's got one arm around Mr. Body, and he doesn't know what to do with his other arm. I gotta visualize it. He's got one arm around Mr. Body, and he's like, doesn't know what to do with this body that's draped over the arm of the couch. So he just kind of like puts his hand on
the lower part of her back.
And no,
no,
it's her straight up. He's like, and.
This guy's got real issues with ladies.
He touches Miss Scarlet's at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He stares with abandon at Yvette's décolletage.
Tiddlywinks.
If you will. And then he like grabs a dead lady's like, Miss Professor Plum.
Mm-hmm.
Stop.
Yeah. So, and like my next note was after all of this, Colonel Mustard like is like, anybody want a drink? And they're like, yeah. And so you do see a shot of him like pouring the drinks, and it's just like with wild abandon. And I'm like, that pour style is valid, because like if I had to deal with this, I'd be like, yeah, I don't really care about keeping a clean counter.
Yep. He starts to pour himself a very delicate drink, and then just pours over like five more glasses. He's like.
Right. And so like everybody's kind of pointing fingers, because they're like, it could be you. It could be you. It could be you. And even Colonel Mustard, it just goes into Wadsworth about like, is there anybody left in the house?
We don't know. We don't know who's in the house, because when we got introduced initially, there was the cook and the maid.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Wadsworth himself.
Right.
And then all of the additional guests started appearing. But I think it's actually pretty genius to have to decide that they will pair up and make sure that there's no additional person in the house. I think it's smart. Yeah. I would have done it. Like, if you honestly think that no one in your party did it, you gotta look.
Right. And this is something that Colonel Mustard recommends. And everybody's like, but what if someone here is the murderer? And so Wadsworth like gathers up all of the weapons and he puts them into a cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see.
He locks it. He puts the key in his own pocket.
Right.
And then they go back into, I think, the kitchen. And then he creates the straws, which is matches. So
right.
He has 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to cut 8 matches in different lengths. And then he's like, whoever pairs up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stacks them in his hand, and he makes this beautiful little gesture, which, Lydia, I've stolen in different situations. This is genius. So you put all of the matches, or it was actually lengths of string when I did it. But I was like, yeah, you know, you pull them up. But here's what he did. He takes one match and he's like sticks it way up. And it looks like one of the longer matches because of the tails of the matches hanging out of the bottom of his hand. So the person looking at it thinks that it's the long one. And they're like, oh, yes, I will pick a long one because whoever I want to be with is stuck with a long one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done this?
No.
I'm insane. I'm an insane person, but I have 100% done this. It's a beautiful scene. It's weird because it's such an aside sequence. But in the way that the characters react, it's so very, very smart. So everyone goes through and pulls their matchsticks and gets paired up. And I have that list. But their Their reactions are so very genuine. Did you notice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know who they are all paired up with?
Peacock and Plum, mm-hmm. and they are the ones who go into the cellar because they have the shorter ones.
Wadsworth says, shortest one's bottom, mm-hmm. second one's second first level, right. and so on. Plum and Peacock, you're correct.
Right. Colonel Mustard and Miss Scarlet go on the main floor.
Yes.
Wadsworth and Mrs. White are on the second floor.
Yeah.
And then you have Mr. Green and Yvette go to the attic.
In my notes, it says Green and Babette.
But I think before they can actually split up, they, what is it? Oh, that was it. After they locked the weapons into the cabinet, Wadsworth says he's going to go and throw the key outside. And as soon as they open up the door, there's someone standing at the door.
Oh, it's random car broke down guy.
Motorist. Yeah, he's stuck in the rain because his car broke down and he comes to this house to seek a phone that he can use. And so they're all freaking out because they got two bodies. And so they usher him into the lounge,
mm-hmm.
and then they lock him in, and then they go and throw the key
mm-hmm.
out the door.
Yes. Yes, they do.
Right. So and then they go ahead and they split up.
Yes. And there follows like the most delicious. Okay. So everyone in this movie is entirely self-serving. So they have to go into each scene as if they are with the murderer. And two people who think the other person might be a murderer is like the funniest. Mm-hmm. Like they are like suspicious of each other and they don't want to walk behind one another. At one point, Lydia, middle name unknown Malcolm, child of God. What? When Mr. Green and Miss Scarlet are behind the bar together.
Mr. Green and Miss Scarlet behind the bar? I think Colonel Mustard.
Oh, you're right. It's Mustard and Scarlet.
Okay.
You're right.
Yeah.
They're behind the bar together.
Oh.
And he says, after you. Ladies first. And she goes, no thanks, or whatever she says. And then they both try to shove their pieces of cake through a one piece of cake entrance to get out from behind the bar. And they fight and they struggle. And I was like, I was watching it with you. And I say, why are they doing that? And you turned to me and said,
because the director told them to. If you were hoping for an in-universe reason as to why they both went through there, it probably is because of the fact that they don't want to get behind. They don't want someone to be behind them.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the funnier thing is to say that the director told them to do it.
Uh-huh.
So why are you in so much pain?
Because it makes so much sense, but I never want you to tell me that again.
Okay.
when I ask why, don't say the director said so, period. That's what my notes say. Because the director doesn't... Who the f*** directed this?
It was directed by Jonathan Lynn.
Who do I know him from?
He was born April 3rd, 1943, which is our dateversary.
He was 6 years old when Clue came out.
Nuns on the Run, My Cousin Vinny.
Oh.
Trying to find where he's just... You just wanted director credits?
Yeah.
Yes, Prime Minister, which is a TV series in 2013. The Fighting Temptations, The Whole Nine Yards, Sergeant Bilko, the movie, My Cousin Vinny, as I said, and those are the big ones, unless you know what Nuns on the Run is.
I do not.
It's not that flying nun thing with Sally Fields, right?
No, it's two criminals want out, but their boss kills those leaving, and so they escape and dress as nuns.
That sounds a lot like Sister Act.
That is the plot of Sister Act, exactly.
Not Sister Act 2.
But it's like Some Like It Hot meets Sister Act.
Most People Like It Temperate. Is that the...
No One Likes It Godly.
There's a proportion that appreciate it cold. Fair enough.
So, so actually focusing on Colonel Mustard and Mrs. Scarlet or Miss Scarlet for a moment,
uh-huh.
they actually go through some of the different areas and they actually reach the ballroom. And when they're in there, Mrs. Scarlet points out that there could be someone over by the curtains. And Colonel Mustard's like, you go ahead and do it. I'm going to go ahead and check one other room. So they split up in this moment.
That's the thing. All of them end up splitting up for just a moment, right, which gives credence to whodunit later on.
Right. So Miss Scarlet goes over by the window. She sees that a window has been busted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, that's when we start. That's when we see the motorist get killed. He's on the phone. He's like, hey, I'm at this creepy house and I think I see my old boss. Thunk.
What does he get thunked with? Do you see?
I don't think we see.
Just ka-tunked.
Yeah.
That happens. Mm-hmm. So we see Plum and Peacock in the basement.
Right.
I don't think they split up, do they?
I don't think so.
Green and Babette.
They're at the foot of the attic and they're like doing that same thing that Colonel Mustard and Scarlet are doing. They don't want, like, neither one want to go up, but I don't get the feeling like it's because they distrust the other. I think it's mostly because they're afraid that something's up there.
I am scared of the dark.
Right.
And so, he's like, I'm super gay and also scared of the dark.
Right. So they go up the stairs at the same time, but it's a narrow stairway.
So in a way, like, her feet go up, but her shoulders do not. Eventually, she's near parallel with the stairs as they walk up the stairs. It's hilarious. It's gorgeous. Right. It's funny. It is super funny. But, like, of these four couples, the ones who steal the scene are Butler and Miss White.
Yes. And that's Tim Curry and Madeline Kahn, the comedy duo that we have been doing without.
Right. I would have. Could you imagine them in a film together?
I know. Like I could, like, so you know that, you know, the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie Brad Pitt.
What broke up Brad and Chick from Friends.
So, like, comedy version of that from the 1980s starring Tim Curry and Madeline Kahn. I want to go to the universe where that happened. But it's like a comedy version. And so they're like spies, but they're like, they're not like super, like, they're not like James Bond spies.
Okay, wait. Hold on.
Does anyone remember Scarecrow and Mrs. King?
No, but here's what I'm picturing is Madeline Kahn putting young Tim Curry up against a wall and telling him something.
I remember Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
I don't.
I like vaguely remember hearing about it at some point.
Madeline Kahn with opera length gloves and Tim Curry in like opera formals. I'm having a moment. He would have not a derby, but like a top hat. And she would not have a boa, but she would have a very silken scarf. Nearly never.
So I can't remember what. I think they go to the conservatory. I think Colonel Mustard.
The
green room.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing with all of the dead plants.
Yes, that's
Or maybe they go back.
Mustard and Scarlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then they go back into the kitchen.
Right.
And that's when Scarlet, like, for no good reason, and you know both of us have explored random rooms in people's houses. Mm-hmm. She's like, what if I toggle this switch? Mm-hmm. This random hook. She like, and then a wall opens and she's like, and now they found the first of our two secret rooms.
Yeah, two secret passageways.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they eventually find the secret passageway into the lounge where the motorist is. Because there's this moment where they're like, the motorist is dead and they're like freaking out and they're like banging on the door and everything. And that's what brings everybody back together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole big, like, you know, hoop-de-doo about there's a whole big hopscotch.
Hey, when I die, can you throw me a hoopsie-doo?
Hoopsie-doo.
I would like a hoopsie-doo, please.
Okay. I have no idea what that is.
You just said the word, so you should know more than better than me.
Okay. So there's this whole, like, the door is locked, and they can't find the key. And so they go ahead and, people are like trying to like get in there, and, Wadsworth is like, back up. I'm going to go ahead and run into it. And he runs right into it and he can't get out and he can't like break down the door because he's not strong enough. And, Yvette.
One of my favorite things that has survived this film is someone throwing themselves at a door and it not working. It's good.
Right. Oh, and I completely forgot to mention that while everybody's searching through different rooms and everything, mm-hmm. we do see a mysterious individual who's like opening up the cabinet and taking out destroying
the evidence. Yeah. Right. Mysterious leather gloved individual.
Yeah. And that's like right before we see the motorist get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So Yvette goes and is like, I have an idea. And so she goes in to grab the revolver and then she...
The cabinet's unlocked. She just grabs the revolver. She just grabs it.
Correct.
Mm.
But then she comes back out and she trips over someone who fell.
Yes. Okay. So we have had... have one shot in the study where a dude fell down.
She trips, she goes ahead and shoots off another one and it hits the rope on the chandelier.
Correct. And now she takes two shots at the door handle to open... Who's behind the door again? It's Mr. Green.
It's Colonel Mustard, Miss Scarlet, and the dead motorist.
Okay. So they're like, let us out. And she's like, I have an idea. And she runs, I have an idea. And she goes... Your mother was a hamster, if you'd like to watch that episode.
Yeah.
Okay. But like, so she takes one shot, doesn't work, takes two shots. So now we've got four bullets in.
Right. And then the door gets opened and they...
They're like, what did you do shooting at us?
Well, Colonel Mustard gets shot at. And that's when he's like, how dare you shoot at me? I could have been killed and blah, 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 blah. And this is like the worst thing ever. And he's like, you know, kind of like... playing up the frustration that he has. And then as he's like moving away, you can see like the rope on the chandelier constantly breaking.
And he's like, I can't handle one more scare.
Crash.
And like in this beautiful way that this dude does not overreact, he's like, yeah. And he like grabs at his chest. He grabs at his chest and he sits down.
Yeah. And so they're talking about like who killed the motorist and passing blame and, you know, like, you know, remarking different things. And then they there's like another knock at the door. I think we cut during all of this tension to a cop driving up, seeing an abandoned car.
Yeah, that's run off the road, which is random motorist guy.
Right, and then they're like they don't really mess too much with the body because it's like right after the chandelier falls, that's when you have someone's like, what's going to happen now? And then you get the knocks at the door.
They're like, oh shit, a cop, right?
Yeah.
I think for a second they think that it's the police officers that the butler ordered, but it's right. Just a police officer, our second POC, other than Miss
Nakahara.
Nakahara. He gets ushered into
the library
where there's a phone.
Mm-hmm.
He gets locked in.
But as he's like coming into the house, everybody's really suspicious and they're like, you know,
locking doors that he cannot go into because there are bodies there.
Well, and they shut the door.
And then they're blocking. And then they're like super casual.
Right.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever like hidden a thing and then tried to look super casual?
I mean, yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
And it's obvious.
It automatically reminds me of that TikTok with a don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Which is a sound clip from Parks and Recreation. Between the worst siblings in the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so they usher him into the library and then they close the door and they obviously lock him in
he's
there.
Like, what you doing? The phone rings.
Yeah.
And he's like,
what? And so they come up with this idea to go ahead and move the bodies around.
They clean up the chandelier first. They do. And then he's all like, you have a phone call from Jade Grove.
He gets on the phone. He's like talking to the guy on there. And then he tries the door because it's a phone call. And he's like, okay. And so he goes and he starts banging on the door. Like, you can't lock me up in here. I'll arrest you for impeding an officer's investigation.
Unlawful imprisonment and murder.
And that's when the...
They open it up and they're like,
and Wadsworth is like, has like murder and he's got the broom.
I only said that so you would open the door.
Also, there's a lot of suspicious things going on in this house. Like, why do you have a phone call from J. Edgar Hoover? Yeah.
So then doesn't Butler go take that call?
Yeah, Wadsworth goes, takes the call in there, and Mustard's like, why do you have a phone call on J. Edgar Hoover? And he's like, he's on everybody else's phone. Why can't he be on mine?
Because back in the day, before anyone who watches it now would recognize that, like, phones were tapped. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are now currently, like, super used to the government knowing everything. But, like, back in the 80s, we didn't think that they knew everything.
Maybe the cop did it because he's such a fan of murder.
That's a callback to Hot Fuzz.
It is. I think I broke Naomi.
He's such a fan of murder.
Right.
It's next, guys.
Right. So they're like, oh, Mr. Green will go ahead and show you around to places like the ballroom and the conservatory.
I like that she gave him a list of places to go that weren't where the bodies were so that they could get their shit in order. I feel like I would be like, hey, Lydia, you want to take Emily to go look in the backyard at mom's flowers and then maybe to the kitchen? And then maybe you wouldn't want to show her all the improvements in the master bedroom and then come downstairs to see everything we've done. Like,
yeah.
And then I just run downstairs and try to make it not look like
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what just happened.
Right. So that's when Mr. Green goes through all of these different places. And when the cop eventually like goes into the study, Mr. Green's like, no,
you don't
want to
go in there. What you're going to see is unseemly.
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, the cop busts through the door and he...
And Madeline Kahn is making out with a dead Mr. Body.
Michael McCain is McCain?
It's Martin Mull is making out with the cook.
Nakahara. Except that Miss Peacock's behind her.
She's like doing the arm
like
thing.
Like arms.
Yeah. So,
and she's behind her being like,
Yeah. And then they go into the lounge where you got the motorist who he's got like this blood on his head. And so they put his hat back on.
Yeah, they pour booze on his face. And then Miss Scarlet and Professor Plum start making out. Mm-hmm. And it's arguably his least creepy moment. They're making out. And then the cop comes over and sniffs him. And he's like, he's drunk. He's dead drunk. And they're like, yes, yeah. Dead yeah. Drunk.
Mm-hmm. You better make sure that this guy doesn't drive home.
We will make sure this man doesn't drive anywhere.
Right.
The cop says, there's just people in having a good time.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing illegal going on here. And then that's when Wadsworth comes out and the cop's like, I saw everything that went on. You have nothing to be ashamed of. And he's like, oh, I thought it was a crime. And he was like, no, there's nothing illegal going on here. This is America. And he's like, land of the free. And he's like, I didn't think it was that free. Because there's this whole, like, what the audience knows is that the cop sees, this song and
fun,
dance.
Yeah, the sexy makeout scene.
Yeah.
Except if you didn't know that, like, two of the people in that room were dead, you'd be
right.
Like, or three of the people in that whole vignette were dead.
But all Wadsworth is thinking is, wow, this cop goes ahead and is okay with us murdering people.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and so he's like, okay, so can you go back into the study real quick? And so he ushers the cop into the study.
He's like, I can still use your phone.
Right.
For sure. Locks him in.
Yeah.
Part two of our review of 1985's Clue has completed a plotter, but we still have one more part to our walkthrough, including our end-of-the-month shocked and applaudable moments. And we're celebrating the true crime genre this month. And we think you might really enjoy checking out these shows. Riddle Me That, True Crime Podcast, takes a deep dive into the facts of unsolved cases, disappearances, and mysteries, with host Jules. And Lady Justice Podcast looks at fascinating cases both past and present, hosted by Chantel. We hope you'll check these great shows out by following the links in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and the person who's wearing the rest of Yvette's costume, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud wants your amazing content as much as you crave ours? It's true. By leaving us a fantastically worded review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.com, you help boost us up in search results. We love reading what you think of the show, and if you haven't written a review yet, we'd really appreciate your feedback. We'll be back in 1 week for the conclusion of our review of this classic whodunit comedy. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.